Hi there, my name is Safo Akono, and welcome to the Launchpad Stories podcast, which is a part of Launchpad, an initiative of Endowan and Company Law Firm. Launchpad focuses on providing free legal education to women entrepreneurs. In this podcast, we let you into the lives of many successful entrepreneurs in their very own words. They share their entrepreneurial journeys with us, which of course are littered with many stumbling blocks that they turned into stepping stones. Whether you're a budding entrepreneur or a well-established business owner, this podcast is for you. If you're looking for business inspiration, you certainly click the right button. Enjoy. Welcome to the second episode of the Launchpad Stories podcast. On today's episode, we have an insightful conversation with a lady who owns not one, not two, but five companies. She also runs a thriving NGO focused on providing legal representation to prisoners who have been denied fair and just treatment in the legal system. Whether you're a socialite in Ghana or not, chances are you definitely know the Sandbox Speech Club. Here is Mrs. Sarah Mary Femi Bidietio Asante. I guess I'll probably start with what I know about you. That you obtained your BA in Business Administration and Communication from Wesleyan College. You are the CEO of Group Sebastian, which encompasses Sandbox Beach Club, Red Chili Restaurant, Madame Butterfly Restaurant, School of Culinary Arts. You have a catering collective, and you also own Yummy Meals.
Yes, I do.
You are also the founder and executive director of Fair Justice Initiative. You were called to the Ghana Bar in 2011.
Yes, I'm 10 years at the bar.
Wow. And you're currently enrolled in the senior executive program at Harvard Business School.
Yes.
And you support six children on scholarship at the Osu Children's Home.
Yes.
And you're listed by Young Global Leaders Network as part of the 40 most inspirational leaders in Ghana. And finally, you serve on the board of the Ghana Prison Service. Wow, that's a tall list of very impressive feats, I'll put it. I want to find out, I saw once in an interview you had with Jay Kanu, where you mentioned starting Red Chili from your grandma's old kitchen. Can you tell us about that? I think this was as far back as 2009. How did it all begin for you?
I think Red Chili is 13 years old this year. I started Red Chili in my grandmother's kitchen with all the savings I had, which was $600 at the time.
Wow.
Yes. I was the first cook at Red Chili. It's funny how I ended up in catering and hospitality. Because growing up, my mother used to take me to the market every Saturday. Mm-hmm. And I hated it. Because I was one of the coolest kids in school, I think. So it just wasn't cool to say I was going to Ababoshi Market every Saturday. And my mother just, I don't know, I don't know what her aim was at the time.
Wow.
I think she's a biochemist, and we used to go to the market every Saturday morning because she would cook for the week.
Mm.
And I used to have to go, and I hated it, literally.
Wow.
And I used to have to cook on Saturdays with her.
Mm.
But when I was younger, I think I liked it. But when I became a preteen and a teenager, I hated it. And eventually, I went to college and didn't like cafeteria food so much. So I used to cook for myself and the other African students on the campus.
Right.
And that's where my desire to be a restaurateur came from.
So by then, you were already pursuing the business administration degree.
And communication, yes. But I always knew I wanted to be a lawyer as well. I always knew I wanted to do human rights or something along criminal defense. Yeah. So.
Wow. So in that period, when you started Richly with the money you had saved, was it always the intention to go ahead to start these other businesses that you have, which mostly have to do with catering?
With food. I always wanted to be a restaurateur that owned different restaurants of different concepts. So I always had that in the bigger plan to have an Asian restaurant. I choose the types of restaurants based on what I like. So I like Asian food a lot. And I didn't want to do the regular Asian food, so I decided to create an Asian fusion restaurant, Madame Butterfly.
Okay.
And then we created Yummy Meals because my son had a lot of allergies growing up, so I couldn't do bottled food. So I had to make a lot of food for him, organic. And that's what, that was the story behind Yummy Meals. So there's literally a story behind everything that I do, because overall I don't believe in making a profit without a purpose, and I don't believe in creating a business that doesn't provide a solution.
Right.
So that governs my business decisions.
And that's impressive. But now in my mind, I'm seeing you as the student in Wesleyan College, and then there's a cooking bit. So you're cooking for the Africans. That's where your passion started. And then you always knew you wanted to be a lawyer. My question now is, why didn't you just decide to be a professional chef? Because then for most of the things you're doing have to do with food, and you seem to have a passion for it.
That's a very good question. I don't think, to be honest, at the time that I was, you know, this idea was birthing in me, I think we were still stuck in the orthodox, be a lawyer, doctor, you know, genre, I think. And so I don't think I had the courage then to be a professional chef. That's right. One. Number two, because I like to cook, doesn't mean I could cook on commercial scale.
Okay.
You know, and over the years, even though I was the first cook at Richly, I think menu creation with my team and the strategy, the operational aspects of running the restaurants under the group is what I find interesting. Not so much the day-to-day cutting onions and cooking. I think when I was younger I was, but as I've grown older, no, I think it's the strategy part that I find interesting. And I think also at the time it was, I don't think I the environment or anything had the courage, because when I decided to start Richly, I was working at a bank. When I moved back from the U.S., I was working at a bank and I wanted to start Richly, and everybody thought it was a bad idea. I mean, I had people who said, but who's going to order banku and okra at work?
Yeah. You know?
And everybody thought it was a bad idea. So I think, as much as I believed in myself and I believed in what I was trying to do, I was hedging to be safe as well. So I kept working at the bank, and I applied to law school, and I quit working at the bank when my passion, I guess, took precedence over what everybody else thought.
Okay, it wasn't because the business had started getting really...
No.
Okay.
I quit before... I entered law school.
Okay.
I quit because at the time everybody thought, well, what are you doing? Like, everybody was craving or like coveting a bank job. And it was like I had it and seemed like I didn't want it.
Yeah.
And I just thought, I'm just going to go for what I believe in.
Yeah.
I'm one of those people that I like challenges. So if you tell me I can't do something, you just gave me the fuel and ammunition to do it.
Wow. So in recent times, I've come to believe there is a thing like the Ghanaian dream. And it's a bit funny, but it looks like that's what it is now, where, especially on social media, Twitter, the goal for most young Ghanaians now is to let's travel abroad, let's work, let's make money, and then let's come back to Ghana and maybe, you know, just own some apartments, own some, you know, properties. A thing of let's all move out there and make it. And then I'm wondering, so you were there, you started the cooking thing there. Why didn't you start Red Chili and all these businesses in America? Was it a thing where you were forced to come back, or you really just wanted to come and start this in Ghana?
I was very homesick when I was in college.
Oh.
I don't think that I was one of those who wanted to stay in America. I wanted to have the flexibility of being able to go and come.
Okay.
And I thought it would be easier for me to start at home where I knew, as opposed to in America. But right. I believe in the expansion of my business across in different countries and continents now.
Right.
But I think it was important for me to start at home. Yeah.
Maybe there's a big question. So you started Red Chili. Which business was next?
I started Red Chili, then I did Yummy Meals, then Madame Butterfly, and then I realized that the kind of level of customer service or experience that I was looking for, I wasn't getting a lot of. Mm. So that birthed the School of Culinary Arts.
Oh, right. Yeah. And are there, this may be a bit of a silly question, but are there enough teachers, like chefs, who will be teaching in Ghana? Or you would have to...
Well, we do have chefs. And I think we have cooks who call themselves chefs.
Okay.
So in the hospitality industry, I think that before it used to be the industry for, you know, it wasn't really, it hadn't developed as much as it is now, like as compared to our East African counterparts in Kenya. But I think that now there's a need for it.
Okay.
So, and also to improve on the expertise that we have in the industry. And that's right. why I created the Coast School of Culinary Arts.
Mm.
But yes, it's one of the things that we struggle with is finding the chefs on that of that international caliber
right.
to be able to teach and groom the younger upcoming chefs.
Yeah. Am I right in assuming that you started the subsequent businesses from the profit you made from Red Chili?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. I'd worked Red Chili for 10 years, and Yummy Meals came up about 2-3 years
okay.
into the start of Red Chili. And then we just worked around that. I was in my grandmother's house for about, the back of her house for about maybe about 3-4 years
okay.
before I rented my first place at Red Chili. I had a great landlord who I couldn't believe gave it to me at the price. Nobody believed he was giving me the rent in CDs in Osu. But I think he believed in me. And I remember when I was negotiating the rent, I said to him, because I knew he had so many offers.
Yeah.
You know, people offering to pay dollars. And I didn't have. So I just said to him, I'm just a young girl with a big dream.
Mm.
And yes, I've also had to take out loans at some point. I went for a loan from UT Bank and put my car as a collateral.
Wow. You must have really believed in this dream.
I did. And, yeah. you know, as you all know, the rates were really high.
Yeah.
But I did.
Hmm.
I went for a UT loan twice.
Wow. In a book I read, which I believe is titled Making Futures by Sangudele, in that book, he goes around Africa and he interviews many entrepreneurs. In Nigeria, he speaks to a lady who owns, she's probably in the medical field, if I'm not mistaken, and she tells stories of how she's looking for funding or investors, but when she's going, she needs to go with a man, preferably a white man, so that Because somehow it's difficult for parts of Africa, I'll put it, to accept that a woman is heading a business, or she's just in charge of this huge business. And for you, it's like a conglomerate. It's like a huge thing, which is rare. Do you, or have you ever had such challenges where people feel like, oh, you're actually not the real owner of all these, or they're like, no, we're not going to give you this money because you're a woman?
Well, have I had those experiences? Yes. I remember when I was bidding for a contract maybe about 11 years ago, not too sure, but in the early stages of Red Chili. And I went to a meeting and they asked me several times if I was the owner.
Wow.
Because I think, I don't know, I don't think they expected me to be the owner. And I was pretty young then. So you do get that. And then I think when anybody asks you that question, at the back of their mind, they don't believe that you can execute this, what you're proposing. I also remember I submitted another proposal for Yummy Meals to a school, and I had to speak to the person in charge. And she goes through the proposal. She sort of like skims through the pages, and I'd spent so many, like I'd stayed up at night to do the proposal and made sure I'd answered all the possible questions in it. And she says to me, is this something you think you can do, or this is just a proposal? I was very offended.
Wow.
And I think I find it even more offensive when it comes from women.
Mm.
Yes, when women say that, because we have to deal with it on a bigger scale. And if we say we're all about women supporting each other and women empowerment, I don't think that those are sort of the questions that women should ask each other. I think it should be, even if you had a doubt, it should be, this is interesting. How do you expect to do this? Or what do you think you need to be able to bring this vision to life?
Right.
Instead of from a more positive viewpoint, as opposed to the negative or the this can't be done rhetoric that we all complain about, but we don't realize that we do it sometimes.
Wow.
And with respect to funding, I believe that if, for example, I don't want to ever have to feel like I'm begging. It's not a good feeling for me. And I don't want anybody to lend me money or to invest in my business because I'm a woman.
Right.
Or because I brought a white man or something.
Mm.
I believe in creating a product that's so good that you can't afford to ignore me. So even if I'm not where I want to be able to attract that funding, I want to be able to be working towards it.
Right.
So that when I present to you the, what you guys call the investment deck or something along those lines, it's very hard for you to say no.
To say no.
You know, I want to be able to show you a growth pattern. That's why I don't believe that you must have everything to be able to start. Mm. And I tell a lot of young entrepreneurs that I started with $600 in my grandmother's kitchen. I was the first cook at Red Chili. I was the only one taking orders. At some point, I used to take the orders up until 10 a.m. and then start delivery from 1,
wow,
having done prep. And I used to deliver with my car that my grandmother had lent me to deliver. And needless to say, we were late all the time, but I kept at it and I kept going. And then I was able to afford a dispatch rider.
Wow.
And I bought a first motorbike. And then I realized that it was a lot to be able to manage the dispatch rider, because they always had a puncture or something. And so it was like, exactly. So then I needed to get a dispatch company to be able to deliver for me.
Right.
And then pass on the delivery cost to the consumer so that it can be run efficiently. So I think so long as you're keeping at it and you're showing, you know, progression, it'll get to the point where they want to invest in you because they can see what you're doing, you know. But you have to put your money where your mouth is. So if you want to do, for example, between Red Chili and Yummy Meals, I could have said, well, I needed a new space to start Yummy Meals. But I started Yummy Meals in the same kitchen with Red Chili.
Right.
And just created it for school kids.
Mm. Wow. I'm of the view, and please correct me if I'm wrong again, that the, what do I call this industry? The catering industry? Hospitality industry in Ghana.
Because I do Sandbox as well.
Yes. I'm of the view that it's very competitive in Accra. Inarguably, Sandbox is all the way up there. Is it, I guess what I'm trying to find out is, how do you stay relevant in this ever-changing industry in Accra?
I think your question is twofold about the competition.
Right.
To be honest, I feel like I'm my own competition. Apologies if it sounds a bit cocky.
It's fair.
Because I focus a lot more on developing my product and my experiences, you know?
Okay.
So, yes, and I'm happy that the, you know, this, the landscape is changing. I see new restaurants coming up every week or so, and I think that it keeps everybody on their toes. It keeps you creating even better projects. I think creativity is stirred when you have competition. So it's welcoming for me, because if you're going, if there's a restaurant that's doing this, for me, it's like, how do we do even something more?
Yeah.
Or how do we create even more fulfilling or exciting experiences in my space, you know? And I think that staying relevant is focusing on your purpose.
Right.
I think if you go off of, I want to stay relevant by staying ahead of restaurant A or B, you're not going to be, because you're always going to just be seeing what they're doing next.
Right.
But if you stay relevant in your purpose and your vision, I think if you stay on course with your purpose and your vision, I think you will become relevant without you realizing. It's like, for me, I always tell people, I don't wake up thinking about how do I inspire somebody. I just wake up being me. And if it's through that process, I inspire somebody, that's great.
Amazing. So all this is reminding me of interviews I read that you had given or I've watched, and you have been quoted saying that one of your biggest pieces of advice to give to young people is live your truth.
Yeah.
And I'm hearing you share your experience, and I'm like, oh, she actually quit her banking job because she's living her truth. And that was not for her. She's going somewhere else. And even on how you answer the question of competition, then I see that indeed you are all for people living their truth. You mentioned again in an interview, I think you had given this to Alden's Lane Business and Coaching Services, that you wanted your business to be a place where employees enjoyed coming to work. Is that still important to you, and why was that even important to you?
It's absolutely very important to me, especially in my industry. I think happy employees actually deliver best. So in my vision, it is part of being an employer of choice.
Okay.
My vision is also to be an employer of choice, because I don't, going back to my business principle is, I don't believe in making a profit without a purpose. Yeah. I don't want anybody to come and work with Group Sebastian and leave the same. You know, so it's important to me when we're creating programs within the group for staff that we give it as much thought and as much seriousness and as much funding as we do in developing a new restaurant.
Right. You know,
I think, for example, at Group Sebastian, we have a program that we're currently developing but have piloted in a way called the Path to Success program, where when you come into work, we create for you an individual path to success. So we have a kitchen porter who came in and was a kitchen porter and was understudying the chefs, who's now a line cook at one of the other restaurants. And even though he can't read as well or write as well, we try and help to be able to finally enroll him into the School of Culinary Arts.
Right.
So it's very important for me that we are an employer of choice. And by so doing, you have to think about your employees, because I cannot exist without the people who work for me.
Yeah. And it gives the impression that you are very invested in your employees, which I think is a rare trait for employers, so I think is laudable, is it sort of reminds me, or I feel like it's similar to what you're doing with Fair Justice Initiative. So from looking at the website, from, and I have a few friends who've even worked there, and it's impressive that you go to these prisons and you equip them with some needed life skills. Could you talk to me about that exactly? What's the process for that?
How I started Fair Justice Initiative?
Yeah, just how you started and what exactly it's focused on.
Fair Justice Initiative is focused on providing legal representation for marginalized people, for providing skills training,
right,
for inmates to help them reintegrate into society, and to advocate for fair and humane treatment of inmates during incarceration.
Okay.
And also to break the stigma associated with incarceration.
Yeah.
I started Fair Justice Initiative because, besides the fact that I always wanted to be a human rights lawyer, during pupillage, I didn't like corporate law.
Mm.
I didn't like it at all. And I was sitting in court one day, and I was witnessing a trial for my first prison friend, Ishmael Clotte, who was arrested for stealing, robbery. Actually, he was charged with robbery, and he didn't understand the proceedings, didn't understand anything.
Yeah.
And I was confused as to how he was standing trial and didn't understand anything. So he became my friend. I represented him in the latter part of the case, pro bono, and he was sentenced to 10 years. I was very upset. I actually cried, and he was sent to the prison, and I used to visit him a lot,
yeah,
and send him foodstuffs, and he used to tell me about different issues that people had.
Oh.
And then I did my other case of a juvenile who was arrested for robbery, but she should have never been incarcerated.
Mm.
And I was able to get her out after 7 years in prison. And I went to great lengths to prove her age because we didn't have a birth certificate or anything.
Yeah.
And so through that, I just developed the Fair Justice Initiative. I used to be the only lawyer, but now we have a full team of lawyers, program managers, and we've been able to secure some funding from GIZ, the Australian High Commission, and friends who've also helped.
Wow.
And it is the corporate social responsibility arm of our firm, Ampim Chambers, as well.
Okay.
So that's what I do. But I believe that is my God-given purpose.
On this issue of purpose, and this is a really big question, I can understand. What makes you happy as an entrepreneur? I'm sorry.
I think what makes me happy is when I smash my goals, and when I'm able to, through my work, make changes in the lives of the people who work for me.
Right.
So I'm very excited when, you know, my staff are maybe go back to school and are still working. I encourage them, and I just like to see them grow.
Yeah.
As I grow. Because, for example, at Red Chili, I have staff who've been with me for almost 13 years when I started. And at the time, I was the only person that saw the vision, and they stuck with me through it all. So those things are heartwarming for me.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you have any strategies, or what are your strategies for staying on top? And I'm saying staying on top because it's very common to hear stories of entrepreneurs starting something really great, and then they find out that, oh, they're running at a loss, or something, business papers are not in order, things of the sort. Did you ever have such things, or you had a strategy from the outset to make sure that all these things were not happening to you?
No, I didn't have a strategy. And I think you'd be surprised, because as a lawyer myself, I should know better. And that's what people expect. Yeah. But you underestimate the importance of having those compliance, statutory compliance, business registration, et cetera. So you do the basics, right? Register the business and open the account. You make sure that, you know, you keep your accounting as proper as possible.
Yeah.
But the thing is, if you want a bigger picture or you want to be able to do it on a bigger scale, right, looking at the bigger picture, it's important for you to start it from the onset.
Yeah.
And that's what I tell a lot of young entrepreneurs, because having started Wretchedly was a hobby. It was more, you know, I want to create this business.
Right.
So I know the technical aspect of it, but not, you'd expect that I know all the legal aspect, but I didn't, of it. And you sort of focus on the technical aspect of it, making the food, etc., but not realizing that you have to have file annual returns at the Register General.
You obviously hate corporate law.
I do. You're supposed to file annual returns or all these statutory obligations that I'm not so conversant with. And when you don't do that, when you're moving up and you now are looking for that seed funding, they're looking whether you've been compliant from day one.
Yeah.
And then you haven't, not intentionally, but because you didn't find out or you didn't know how to or where to go for that help.
Were you fortunate enough to know this early before anything went AWOL?
I think I knew more than probably maybe the average entrepreneur by virtue of the fact that I'm a lawyer by profession, but I didn't realize that at the rate at which I was growing, it would be important for me to invest money in actually getting the likes of a launch pad or et cetera in establishing that foundation, because that foundation is very important.
Right.
Because for me, I want to be able to eventually go IPO.
Mm.
And that would require a lot of compliance and making sure our books are in order from day one. Otherwise, you'd be starting off at a later stage than when it was actually started, which wouldn't help what I want to do.
Wow. The dream is big.
Yes, I do. I want to be the first female IPO listed hospitality group.
It will happen. I mean, it looks like whatever you set your mind to is definitely happening. That also makes me think about COVID. And for a lot of your businesses, COVID was definitely impacting it, you know, adversely. How did you manage that period?
I'll share an interesting story about COVID. So COVID hit. We had different regulations. You couldn't eat, dine in anymore. We had to do takeout and delivery. Some of my restaurants are not designed for takeout and delivery, like Mud and Butterfly or Sandbox Beach Club. So we had to come back to the table and try and think outside the box and create new products. That was very tasking. Mm-hmm. And then you're not generating as much income, but you have staff. So I walk into a meeting at Sandbox, where at that time they had just resumed dine-in, but, you know, spaced out open air. So at least we were blessed with the fact that it's open air, so we could still have people come in to eat. But for obvious reasons, the traffic was not anywhere close to what we were doing prior to COVID.
Yeah.
So I walk into a meeting with my staff and I acknowledge that COVID has been very difficult. And I say to them that we're going to have to run a shift system and the COVID protocols, why it's important for us to be able to adhere to it and why I want to be able to make sure we don't lose any member of our team, and it's important to us. So I stop halfway and I ask if there are any questions about it, because it's important for me that they understand.
Yeah.
And one of my staff puts his hand up and I'm thinking he's about to ask a question, and he had tears in his eyes and he said, "I thank you that you didn't fire or let go of any of us."
Okay, now I have goosebumps.
And the problem was, I was just about to say, after that break of what I just said, that we're going to have to cut down staff. In that moment, I felt God spoke to me. My faith is very important to me, and my belief in God is the basis for everything that I do. In that moment that he said that with tears in his eyes, and he said it was very difficult for him to come to work today, I didn't say what I had to say next on my agenda. Yeah. And I came back to the office to try and figure out how I was going to make this work without firing anybody.
Wow. I'm interested in what next.
So we came back to the office and we run a shift system,
yeah,
where I made sure everybody at least had a week of work.
Wow. And it was possible.
Well, I think it was very difficult.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm happy that I didn't. But like I said, I felt like in that moment, it was God that spoke to me, because the whole time I'd just been talking about COVID protocols, and I was leading up to saying that
yeah.
we'd have to let go of some staff.
How then do you manage to handle all these businesses at the same time so that one is not lacking in any way?
Well, the idea that people want to see you, I think, yes, you want to be able to create that personal touch, or they want to meet what's behind the brand. I don't think now it's as to see me as a person. I okay. think that the chefs, the waitresses, and et cetera are able to, through training, show what we stand for at Group right. Sebastian. So it's not based on me as an individual. And I also don't like to build businesses that are centered around just me, because it's not just me that makes it happen. So it's important for me that we showcase the people behind the scenes as well. So it's not about me. It's about, if you walk into Mud and Butterfly, you will see the experience. You will feel and see and eat the experience that we hope to convey through, you know, the menus, the yeah. cocktails, the service, etc. So, and that attention to detail that we give to it. So it's not about me,
yeah,
Femi per se. How do I stay on top of all of it? I get asked this question quite a lot, and I'm happy that you didn't say, as a woman or as a mother, how do you stay on top of it? Because no. I find it quite offensive when people ask that. I think if it was a man who was doing all of this, it would be taken in stride. So
right.
I appreciate this question the way it was couched. I stay on top of it by making sure that I put in the necessary structures needed to be able to do it. I don't believe that we can't do it because I need to be everywhere. You
okay.
know? If you set up a good structure, if you invest in it, for example, if you're investing in software, right, to be able to run efficiently, so at any point in time, I know how much stock I have in all the different units.
Yeah.
It doesn't require for me to be in the stock room. So it's important as businesses, when they want to scale up, to invest in the technology, invest right. in your people, and invest in what you do. So say, for example, when I started out, I had to be doing my own accounting, which is basically just the cost, profit, and loss, right? As you grow, you want to be able to, the profit that you make, you could do a lot of things with it. But if you want to be able to scale up, you want to be able to maybe invest in the software that's going to be able to, you know, take the orders or et cetera. Right. Move it up a little bit. You want to be able to invest in a good accounting firm who's going to keep your books correctly and put in the financial structures to avoid leakages, et cetera. So I believe that in order to be able to run the type of businesses that I run, which is different restaurants, a beach club, a culinary school,
yeah.
is to really be able to invest in the back end.
Amazing. We've spoken about the past. We've spoken about the present. Let's talk about the future. It sounds as though you want, or you have a plan in place for these businesses to outlive you. Do you have a succession plan?
Yes, I do want the businesses to outlive me. I actually want to be able to, at some point, not be the CEO. Yeah. I want to be able to. Do I have a succession plan? I think at the moment I'm in the process of creating right. a succession plan. But I think in creating the structures and creating the systems that are not dependent on me as an individual is all en route to creating that succession plan.
Right. To round up this, what does the future look like for you?
As a business, as I mentioned, I want to be the first female IPO-listed hospitality group.
Right.
Personally, I want to continue to live my truth. I want to be happy.
Right.
I want to be, most importantly, be intentional with my relationship with God.
Right.
And to enjoy my family, discover new places, experience new things, and just live, and just you know, my God-given purpose is very important to me. So, creating change and criminal justice.
Okay.
And continuing to help the inmates and their children.
Okay. Your final words, if you have any.
My final words are, find your God-given purpose. Believe in yourself. Do it. You'll make mistakes, but that's just fine. It's what you do with the mistakes and the lessons that you learn from the different unpleasant experiences is what will catapult you into realizing your dream.
Right. Thank you so much, Femi. Oh, I thought your name was also interesting. Miss Sarah Mary Olufemi. Did I pronounce it well? Mm-hmm. Asante, right?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for your time. I think that you are a shining example that it's possible to change the narrative about Africa and about Ghana. It's very possible for us to do things on a larger scale like the countries that we admire. It's also possible to wear many hats and wear them very well. Even for me as a young lawyer, I think it's very inspiring that I see what you have done, that it's possible to explore my creative side, still be a lawyer at the same time, and excel in all the fields that I'm in. So thank you very much again for your time.
Thank you so much. I'm very, I've really enjoyed this. And I think that this was good. I think more, we have to continue to share our own stories. Otherwise, right. it'll be told for us. And for me, I want to be able to build my business by Africans for the world.
Wow.
So this is very laudable. Okay. And thank you. I wish you all the best.
Thank you for listening to the Launchpad Stories podcast. To connect with the Launchpad team, kindly follow us on Instagram and Twitter under the handle at ndnclaunchpad and on LinkedIn under the name ndnclaunchpad. To connect with Endowner and Company, kindly follow us on at Endowner Company on Twitter and n.downer and company on Instagram and LinkedIn. We look forward to hearing from you soon.